All right, let's go ahead and get started. My name is Jamie Kuhl. I'm a program manager in the Team Foundation Server Org, or TFS as we all call it. Now, before we get even off the title slide, there's a couple of frequently asked questions that I feel the need to get out of the way. First question, is that really my last name? Answer, yes. And for everybody, including you, who's thinking that's a cool last name, I have actually heard that one before, thanks. Second question, program manager, what the heck is that? You know, go to all these talks, program managers are giving talks, is that like marketing or something? Answer, no, that would be product manager, totally different from program manager. So program manager, we're actually part of the product team, and our job, more or less, is to try and figure out what you guys want to make sure that we build the right thing. Now, for TFS, this can be a little bit tricky, because the whole point of TFS is to bring the development team together. And there's a lot of different types of people that use TFS. You know, you've got your testers and your business analysts, project managers, ops guys, stakeholders, you name it. But for the next hour, we're not going to talk about any of those guys. We're only going to talk about one persona, developers. Now, why are we going to talk about developers? Because we feel that more or less in TFS, we have done a good job at building a product that has a lot of value for organizations. But if you talk about the folks that use it day to day, we think there's things we could do to make their life better, to make them have a more pleasant experience. And when you talk about the types of people that use TFS the most, day in and day out, developers are the ones that use it the most. So this was actually one of the biggest single themes that we had for this release of TFS, to go through and see what we could do to make TFS be a great experience for developers, to get the pain points out of the way, to give them some things that will provide a lot of benefit. So that's what we're going to talk about. Effectively, our talk is going to consist of one slide, kind of the high-level themes of the release, and then we're just going to do demos the rest of the time. I'll show you all the things that are new and interesting for developers in TFS. Eventually, we will run out of time. When we run out of time, I'll throw up a list of all the things we didn't have a chance to go through, and that'll be the talk. So let's go ahead and get started. So I want everybody to do me a favor right now at the start of the talk. If you use TFS today, particularly if you'd use it from a developer perspective, I want you to think, if you could change just one thing in the product, one thing, what would that be? Everybody think about that for a minute. Now, if you already know a lot of the new things coming in 2012, then you're like down to the 18th thing on your list, that doesn't count. It's got to be the first one, all right? So I'm going to make two bets with you. The first bet is that for the majority of you, you're going to see that one thing before the end of this talk is over. At least I sure hope you do. The second bet is that for a lot of you, that one thing had something to do with our first point here, friction, right? You're trying to use the product, and the product is getting in your way in some form, right? And you just want to do your job and not have to deal with the version control system or something else that's causing you some piece of angst. So that was one of the big pieces, one of the big themes we had, getting rid of the friction. The second theme was around modern experiences. So how many people have used the merge tool that comes with TFS? How many people still use the merge tool instead of a third party that they've plugged in? I feel bad for you guys. So I should be fair. That was a very, very good tool when it was built for Visual Source Safe. So as you can imagine, I'm going to show you a new merge tool before the end of the talk, right? So, but that was a general theme, trying to go through and make the product more modern. That was one example. Another theme, you know, our VC UI inside of TFS has a lot of modal dialogues, blocking UI, not exactly what you would consider to be the best practices for more modern apps and experiences. Those were also themes that we were trying to go fix. And the third one was collaboration. Now, when I talk about collaboration here, I don't mean like, you know, a team Facebook page where the devs are all posting, you know, what they like and all that type of stuff right now. I mean real dev collaboration. Like, he changed some code and I changed some code, and how do we collaborate to get it together? Or How do we work together to make the code better? That type of collaboration. So these are the three high-level themes, but it's just easier to show you guys stuff than it is to talk about it. So let's switch over. So this is Visual Studio 2012. This is the RC build, more or less. It comes in gray. Oops. And it comes in black. And if you have any feedback on the colors, not the right session. We're going to do most of it in gray today. So you also notice this new window on the right. That's Team Explorer. That's the new Team Explorer. So we've thrown away the old Team Explorer and redone the new one. Now, before we go through and I show you all the new features in it, I want to talk a little bit about the motivation for why we did this. So like all releases, you know, we were into the planning phase, and eventually we boiled it down to a set of features that we'd like to go do for the release. And as we were going through them, we kept thinking about, okay, what is the user experience for this going to look like inside of Visual Studio? And we would get to the first feature, and we thought about it for a while, and it suddenly came to us. That would be great as a new tool window inside of Visual Studio. And then we got to the second feature on the list, and we thought, new tool window, that would be great. And we kept going down through the list. And then we thought, hey, we've got this modal dialog that we really like to get rid of, but where do we put this thing that used to be a modal dialog? And we thought, new tool window. Before we know it, we had about 30 new tool windows. And we know that you guys all love new tool windows, so we were pretty excited. And then Brian Harry slapped us once or twice, and we said, okay, no, that's probably a bad idea. So the new Team Explorer was born. Now, the old Team Explorer was really just a navigation hub, right? Like a list of work item queries and builds, and you'd click there to go do your work. The new Team Explorer is different. You actually do a lot of your work inside of it. So let's just go explore it. Now, this is the home page, all right? And at the home page, I have these hubs. This is my work hub, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Pending changes is also now in here, work items, builds, web access, settings. If I was connected to a server that had reports or documents, those would also be showing here as part of it. The reason they're not is that I'm connected to the hosted TFS service right now, which doesn't have reporting and documents on it. So we'll do our entire demo against it, conference network permitting. In fact, I'll do a little plug for that right now. If we open up the browser, and like they announced in the keynote, if you go to TFS preview, we have our fancy new getting started page, and the invite codes are now off. So anybody that wants to play around with the hosted service can do it by just going and signing up and getting your own account, and about 45 seconds later, you'll be ready to go. So for all of the things that I'm showing you today, pretty much all you need is TFS 2012, which could be the hosted service or your own on-premise install, or the new version of Visual Studio. Some of the things I'm showing you don't require both, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through it. All right, so let's go play around with Team Explorer here. So, you know, let's go into work items, because we're all familiar with that one. And this will take me into the work items hub. And inside of the work items hub, you'll see that I have this query tree down here. So this is just like what you would expect. I can open up queries, and there's none there, but I can open up the queries and go through all that stuff. There's one thing new on this one, which is up here we have favorites. You know, we had favorites before in Team Explorer, but they weren't really very useful. Not a lot of people used them, so we redid them. Now if you go to this page, any query that that you pin up here, like that one, you know, you can get the summary of the number of work items that are in it just by going to the page. And there's another few benefits to the favorites that we'll explore as we go a little deeper into the session. But I can create new work items and all that type of thing that you would expect. So that's got a little bit of new stuff on it, but it's pretty similar. If we go look at builds, though, builds is very different. Builds is now meant to be the build hub for the developer using Visual Studio. So if we collapse this for a section, we just take it section by section. Down here, we have the list of all the builds like we're used to, except now I can do things like filter the builds. You know, if you have a lot of builds, that's pretty useful. We have filtering in a bunch of places in the product now. We also have up here favorites for build as well. But again, by pinning it as a favorite, you can also see the summary of that build over the last number of builds without actually having to open up the Build Explorer. And then at the top, we have this section called My Builds. So these are the builds that in some way I caused, right? Like I queued the build, or I checked in and it triggered a CI build or a gated build. So these are the builds that I'm the most likely to be interested in. So again, just by going to the build hub, I can see the view of the builds that I'm most interested in and drill in the details for them if I want. And so that's kind of a handy thing. And another nice thing is if I click through, does anybody notice something that's not happening? I'm not opening up new windows, right? So my personal favorite new feature in Visual Studio 2012 is called the preview pane. And we use it extensively in Team Explorer. Basically, the way it works is when you click on something, instead of it opening in a new tab, it opens in a preview tab on the right there. And if this was an editable thing, if I started editing it, it would be promoted to a real tab. I can also click and promote it. So if I go through here and click on this and promote, it goes like that. But it stops you from having 30 or 40 tabs opening after about 5 minutes of work. All right, so we looked at builds. You also notice, if you look at how I'm navigating here, you see there's a back button. I can go back through this. I can go forward. I can go home. It's kind of got a browser-type navigation feel to it. There's a little navigation shortcut where I can jump to a particular page. You can see I'm rooted in the home CoolScrum V2 project right now. Our entire view is focused on a particular project because most of the time people work in one project. If you want to switch projects, you can do that, and you can go down here and you can switch to a different project or a different team context in a project, which we now support. If you want to learn more about teams, there's an Agile talk I'll point you out at the end of the session that goes into more about that. So that's kind of the basic there. Another handy thing, you see that little search bar up there? Who else loves having to go write a Wickle query just to find like one work item? That's a lot of fun, right? How about if we could just type a thing in here, get a work item search, open up the results, go through the work items, also in the provisional tab as we're going through. Also got a handy dandy little expression filter so I can all see all of the ones that are state new, for example. Right, or assigned to me, you get the idea. So that's a handy new feature. All right, so that's Team Explorer. Now, pending changes is also in here. Now, we moved pending changes from where it used to live into Team Explorer. We did it for a bunch of reasons that I'll talk about a little bit later. But I just want to go play around with the new Team Explorer, with the new pending changes, I should say. All right, so I have a pending changes page, but pending changes aren't very interesting unless I actually have changes. So let's go make a few changes. So let me go and open up a file and just, doesn't matter, put a change in. Go back to Team Explorer, and you can see I have a change right here. All right, mildly interesting. Let's go make a bunch of changes just to get it more interesting. So refactor everything, which is a good trick to get a bunch of changes. And then you can see down here in included changes, we have a tree view. So we give a nice tree view, which makes it easier to look through and see the changes that you've actually made. It's a smart tree in that we collapse the folders to not waste vertical real estate. You can see here this is like 8 folders being collapsed into one. You can filter this too. So I can filter down to just the solution one or apply a custom filter, so only show, you know, files with the name route in them, or maybe only folders name control with thing, you know, only things in the controllers folder. So filtering is kind of nice. You may be asking yourself some questions about some things that are missing, like how do I tell if this is an edit or an add or a delete or that kind of thing? So we use typography now. So all of the changes up there are obviously just edits. But if I were to go and make some other changes, like go delete some images, you can probably figure out which ones are the deletes now. So we do this for a number of, for all of the changes in different forms. Now, the next thing you're wondering is, where are the checkboxes? Well, with the new release, pretty much any change that you make, you need to check them all in at once. No? 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 All right. Okay, no, we're not going to make you do that. You can, there's this other section down there called excluded changes. So if you don't want to check something in, like here, let me give you a real world example. Like web config, right? Like, you know, you have to check in web config, but then you bring it down and you need to put your dev settings, you know, your development environment settings in it, but you don't want to check those development environment settings. Anybody ever check their development environment settings in and screw everybody else up? Yeah, it's happened to all of us. So if we do that, I can just move web config down here into the excluded changes. You know, I can right click and exclude those too. But the nice thing now is this is sticky. So you can pretty much permanently exclude the web config file and leave it always checked out and don't have to worry about unchecking it when you check in. So that's kind of another nice handy thing. I can't figure out what gets me claps and what doesn't. I mean, that's, all right. So, we got a bunch of things there. I'm going to use another handy feature right now, which is undo all, because I think if I check all this stuff in, it's going to be bad later on. So we'll undo all that. And then we will make a change. We will make a change to, how about this guy? Put him some nice carriage returns. And then go back here. All right, so we got our one file, and I want to check it in. So we need to comment. And we can have a short comment, or we can have a long comment. And then we can associate work items. Everyone want to just associate a work item by ID? No, that's kind of handy. Put it in there. What about where's my list if I want to use a query? Well, the queries work a little differently now. So here's my queries. And remember when I talked about favorite queries? So any query that's a favorite query or that's at the root of your My Queries folder will show up here that you can use for this. So I can go to the assigned to me query and say, you know what? This is going to take care of, how about these two build failures? Drag those in. I've got my associated work items. I could associate if I wanted to change this between resolve or associate. I can toggle that right there. And then let's go ahead and check this in. So I'm checking it in, and while it's checking in, you notice I can go and do stuff in Visual Studio, and it's not blocking everything. So we didn't get all of the async and modal dialogues, but we got a lot of them, right? And you'll see a lot of those as you go through. So check-in was one. Another one of my personal favorites, if you think about what the experience was, I want to view a file in a shelf set, right? Like, what was that? It was Visual Studio, find shelf set dialog, shelf set details dialog, new instance of Visual Studio to view the copy of that file, all stacked upon each other, and change sets were pretty much the same thing. So now, if I want to do something like that, I can do find shelf sets, and there's my non-modal find shelf sets. It's filtered down to Jamie Cool. I can come down here and I can filter it down to whatever I want as well as part of that. If I want to clean some of these noisy ones up, I can just delete those guys. If I want to view a shelf set, I can drill into a shelf set. And you see here that I get my shelf set details. And it looks a lot like pending changes because effectively pending changes, change set details, shelf set details, they're all the same thing. And that's one of the reasons why we were collapsing them down like this. Because you want it to feel like Solution Explorer effectively. Because I want to click through here and just look at that file and see it over there on the left, right? And have it in the preview pane. I can just click through, see all the things that are changed. That was a nice change. However, I'm willing to bet that no one heard the last like two sentences that I just said because everybody's staring at that little diff thing on the left, trying to figure out what that is. So we now have integrated diff into the Visual Studio Editor in 2012. So that doesn't get an applause, but the other checkbox thing, I can't figure it out. All right, so it's integrated. We have side-by-side mode. We can do inline mode, and different views work good for different people, for different scenarios. We're going to go back to side-by-side because it works a little better for me most of the time. Now, the coolest thing about this feature, though, I can't actually show you on a shelf set because shelf sets aren't editable. So let's close all this stuff out. And let's go back here and let's make a change. Turn the caps lock off, system.data, whatever, go down here, delete that. How about we delete that? How about we change this to about 2? I used to be in the framework teams for a long time. And I have to tell you, the best part about doing TFS demos is it doesn't actually matter if it compiles most of the time. So let's go ahead and pull up a diff of this. And let's drag it out, because again, the low res is killing me. And I have our diff, and I can see it there. I can kind of zoom it back a little bit. You see I deleted a bunch of things. You can see I have word level highlighting for the where I just changed a particular word as part of it. But the coolest thing about this is that it's the editor, right? So it's all live. So if I wanted to put a prop in, I can do that. Yeah. Wouldn't you like to resolve a merge conflict with something similar? Yeah, hold that thought. So it's baked in. That's a really nice feature because you get the full power of the editor in doing it. Let's see, anything else I wanted to show you here? All right, so we're talking about diff. Let's go ahead and transition and talk about merge. So we wanted to make merge way better this release, and there were three things we did to do that. The first thing we did is we went through and we did a really deep analysis of all of the merge conflicts that we generate, all of the auto-merge resolutions that we generate, and compared them with pretty much every other version control system out there in the world, and wanted to make sure that we weren't generating any extraneous conflicts. So that was a good exercise. We identified a few. There weren't many, but we went through and we fixed that to make sure there wasn't anything that we were doing above and beyond there. The second thing we did is around the auto-merge space. And you know that one actually triggered some really interesting discussions inside of the team. You know, actually, before I go into this, are there any Microsoft developers in the audience? Nobody? Oh, one? All right, just cover your ears for a minute. So, inside of Microsoft, program managers and developers usually have a pretty healthy exchange going on, right? You know, collaboration, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, in kind of thinking through this merge thing, it really kind of hit home for me that by and large, Microsoft developers fit the stereotype of, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Control freaks, I think that's the one I'm looking for. So for most of us, when the conflict resolution window comes up, a little part of us dies inside, right? You know, for Microsoft developers, you know, it's just an opportunity to make sure everything's going to be just right. So what we did is we said, you know what, a huge number of times when that conflict dialogue comes up, you just click that auto-merge button, right? You still went through that mental pain of the conflicts come up, but you clicked the auto-merge button, it took care of things and you moved on. Or you clicked it, it took care of 8 files and it left you with the one file you wanted to do. So we said, look, why don't we just do that for you? So that's what we do. It's configurable, but by default, we will run auto-merge for you, which means if we can auto-merge all of your conflicts, they will auto-merge and move forward. If you have 100 conflicts, but we can auto-merge 99 of them, we will do that, and you will get a conflict window with not with 100 files scaring you, but with one, just one file for you to take care of as part of doing it. So let's play with that. So to do that, we need a file. Let's go grab this guy. All right, so we have just the best math class ever, right? It's a little JavaScript math class that does the four basics. Super math. In fact, I am so happy with this math class, I am going to rename this to super duper math class. But as this is a conflict demo, we need a villain, right, to be generating the conflict, right? And in the role of our villain, he made a guest a cameo earlier, we will be using, running on Linux, assuming I can get my own password right, Eclipse, using the Team Explorer plugin. Now, I know the Azure guys are, you know, all about doing Linux demos now. They talked about that in the keynote because Azure now has Linux support. But I just want to set the record straight. We've been doing Linux demos here in TFS for years now. So we've got the Eclipse plugin running. We got the Team Explorer Everywhere plugin running in Eclipse on Ubuntu version of Linux, talking to our hosted service running in the cloud on Azure, all right? So that's the environment here. So I got that same exact math class, and this, what we're gonna do is we're gonna refactor this, right? So we're gonna, you know, I don't know, we would be fancy here. Well, we will refactor this. Let's see. Am I stereotyping here? Yeah, all right, so we'll check in. You'll notice the new pending changes, and complete with the black-blue text bug, are all in Eclipse as well. So all of the new changes that I'm talking about, the parts that apply to Eclipse, will also be available in the Team Explorer Everywhere plugin. All right, so we've checked in our change. Let's go back here, and I am getting ready to check this in. So I'm going to do a get latest. Now, everybody remember what this divide method looks like, because the low res is going to make this a little tricky. But I'm about to check in, so I just want to get latest to make sure I've got the latest version. So I click get latest. We do a get. And there's our divide method. It auto-merged it with the change that I had made, super duper math, right? So again, I didn't have to deal with a merge conflict. That was kind of nice. Now, that's the easy one, though, because, I mean, those things were really far apart. And so, of course, those could be easy to merge. Let's make it interesting. So I'm going to go back here, and we'll make subtract add. Check that guy in. And I'll go back here, and I'm going to change exactly the same character and make this multiply. And then when I click get latest, we're going to be able to auto-merge this change. No? No? Come on, guys. I'm not going to auto-merge that. We're going to get a conflict. I can't, when you change exactly the same character, there's only so much we're going to be able to do for you, all right? So you're going to need to merge this, all right? So you get the merge window. It lists our one conflict. I'm going to merge this in our merge tool. Click that. Yep. And here our merge tool comes up in our amazing low res. Let's make this a little bigger and shrink it down a little bit. So what you see here, we have the left file, the right file, and the result file at the bottom. Some people like this layout. I kind of like the vertical layout, left file, right file, result in the middle. You could do horizontal view, whatever you want. Now, the way this works is it's highlighting the lines that change, right? So I change that line. And let's say I wanted to take the one that that the other guy made. I check that. The result is going to be x plus y. Maybe I didn't want to take that one. Maybe I wanted my change because I thought it was better. Now it's x times y. I could take both, and that'll put it down there. Clearly, that's not right. Now I need to go, hey, you know, like, no. You're like, you know, maybe his code's not so good, but my code's pretty good, but I could put them together and have even better code, right? That's kind of the way to think about it here. So, you know, I'm down here. I'm not quite sure how to put this together in better code. Really, the point is that it's still the editor, right, with IntelliSense and all of that type of capability is part of it for resolving your conflict, right? So we will maybe put that back to, yeah, let's be crazy. Make it divide. Why not? And then we'll click accept merge. The merge goes through. I go it. And you can see it's all been resolved. I haven't checked any of this in. Let's go check it in. All right, so I checked it in. It's all good. You can see up here it told me that it checked it in. It gives me a link to that change set. I can click on the change set. Also, non-modal. You know, I can go down here. I can look at all the things. Apparently, I checked in that one, which is interesting. Must not have been paying attention, I hope. But let's say that this change, you know, as I think about this, I realize, you know, if my boss actually sees this code change, I could get fired. So I need to get this out of there really fast, right? So I could go up here and click the rollback button and roll back this change set that I just checked in. That would be kind of cool. Except, you know, really, all of the changes for this file were no good. And, you know, even the guy from Linux was making, I really like to get rid of all of the changes we just did because it made the class worse. So I'm going to go do a view history. And here are the three change sets we just did. I'm going to multi-select, right-click, and roll all three of them back. And you can configure a whole bunch of different rollback options as part of this. And now what this is going to do is if we go to our pending changes, this has pended an edit rollback. And if we look at that file, you can see the file is now pristine. It's just super math, not super duper math. All of the functions just work. If I do a compare, you know, you can see all of the things it's going to undo. It's going to change the three places where I messed up the file as part of it. And if I check it in, basically this will fix this particular class. Okay, so that's what's better in merge. Let's change gears now and talk about workspaces. So workspace, you know, workspace is just the subset of the files that you want to work on your dev box, all right? Now, In TFS, inside of the team, we actually call them server workspaces. And we call them server workspaces for a reason. Because every time that you make a change locally in Visual Studio to the files, we call back to the server, the server workspace, and tell the server what you changed. So the server always knows what's going on with your sets of files. Now, we do this not to be evil, but for good reasons. The reason is that if you have a very large workspace, like, say, people building Visual Studio, then storing all this information on the server has huge performance gains. When a developer comes to us and says, get latest, we can calculate what they need to make them up to date very quickly. However, if you don't have very large workspaces, this does incur, you don't really get that benefit, and it incurs some penalties. For example, you know, have you ever started editing a file and had it freeze for 3 seconds while it's talking back to the server to go check it out? That's why, because we're calling back to the server to check it out. This comes up in other places. Have you ever wanted to, I don't know, edit files without being connected to the network, or when your network connection was being flaky and had problems? Yeah, I'm willing to bet that you have. The server workspace is where all those problems are coming from. So we have something new in this release called local workspaces. Local workspaces are a new type of workspace, and the way that they work is you get your set of code locally, and then unless you put a gun to our head and tell us to go back to the server, we won't. And this gets rid of all of those problems and has a huge number of benefits, which I will show you in a minute. This is the new default type of workspace in 2012. Server workspaces are still there. So if there are anybody out there that has workspaces with 3 million files in them, and they do exist, believe me, we have a bunch of them inside of Microsoft, then server workspaces are still there. And in fact, we did make some of those better, like the fact that we call back and block the checkout, that 3-second problem I just mentioned. We made that asynchronous, so even with server workspaces, they got better. But local workspaces, which I'm going to show you in a second, are the default. If you upgrade your existing client and it uses server workspaces, you'll get a nice little bar, kind of like this yellow bar here in Team Explorer, telling you that, hey, we see that you have a server workspace. Would you like to upgrade it? Click here to yes, and we'll switch it over for you. So let's play around with some local workspaces. So first benefit, offline. If you've used TFS, you know, and tried to use it in disconnected mode, you should be familiar with offline mode, right, which is kind of annoying to go in and out of. With local workspaces, offline mode has gotten significantly better. Specifically, there is no longer any concept of an offline mode. There is just your files. And we don't care whether you have a network connection or whether you're connected or what, your experience when using Visual Studio will be the same regardless. To prove that, we will open up a little ping here, which I have going constantly, because this is how much I trust the conference network. We will pull the network cable, and we should start getting general failures. Excellent. So now we're going to go over, and we're going to start changing some stuff. So we'll just open a file, and we will turn the lights on, apparently. Who's leaning? Somebody's leaning up against a wall. Someone's about to get busted. No. All right, whatever. All right, so, okay, this is a little distracting, guys. All right, we're going to make changes. Hey, I just deleted a line, and, you know, if you look really, really closely, there is an edited glyph here, and this is fun. And, you know, I changed that file. I can go here, and I can change this file. I can delete files. All of this, you know, without having to go offline, no offline mode. It's all kind of working the way that you would expect. You know, if I can go put whatever I want here and here as part of it. But not only are you able to keep coding without being impacted by the network, you can still actually do some interesting things. Like, you know, this change is no good. I'd like to be able to undo this change. So right-click undo. And that works, even though I'm offline. So you're asking yourself, how did that work? It's because we keep a cached copy of the last states when you did your get latest on disk. So we can do things against it, like undo, like compare. So I can go here and do a compare and do a diff even while I'm offline. Now, there are things you can't do while you're offline because we don't sync the entire version control repository down to your dev box. So if I were to go do something like view history right here, you'll see that I didn't just lock up Visual Studio for 45 seconds while this happens. Instead, you know, we tried to go. You know, we give you a nice little async non-modal error as part of it. Now that we've tried at least once to go back to the server and failed to go do it, if I go other places in the UI, like to the pending changes page, you can see we disabled the check-in box because, you know, you're offline as part of it. Now, let's plug the network cable back in, and we will hope and hope that we go back online. All right, the most dangerous part of our demo is behind us. And now if I do something that causes a network round trip, like a refresh, this will succeed and will re-enable the UI because we can see that you're back online. And all of these changes that you just made will, in fact, be able to be checked in. And let's just undo changes that will probably break us later. In fact, let's just undo all so we don't have any later problems. But I could check it all in. So that's one benefit. Let's talk about another benefit. Has anybody, for some unimaginable reason, tried to change a file with any other editor besides Visual Studio? Okay, I can assume that no one in this room has. However, if you go back to your work and any of your coworkers for some reason have, you can tell them their life is better. Because you know that little read-only bit problem thing? You can tell them no more read-only bit. It's gone and it will never be back. All right, so let me prove that. So what we're going to do is we are going to open up our project in Windows Explorer. And we are going to go over to our pending changes page. And we're going to need Notepad. So we'll get Notepad. And let's go ahead and pick a file. How about our handy-dandy little util file there? All right, so I am going to change something. I'm going to put an A in here for whatever reason. Then I'm going to click Save. Now, when I click Save, everybody look in pending changes on the right. So not only was there no read-only bit, but we have a file system watcher watching your workspace so we know what files you've changed. We also have an explicit scanner you can run. So what this means is you can change it with another tool and then use either Visual Studio or the command line to actually commit the changes into TFS. Another cool thing, let me just hit Control Z and undo that change and file save. It's gone. We can tell by the hash you didn't actually change it. Now, you know, other changes are a little bit more interesting. Like, let's say that we wanted to add a new file. Added foo.txt here. And we go back, and you see it didn't pick up foo.txt. And the reason it didn't pick up foo.txt is that adds and deletes are a little different. Like, you just, if you're editing a file that's under version control already, you clearly intended to do something there. If you just added and deleted files, you know, you may or may not want those to be things that get committed to the source control repository. So instead, you see down here in the excluded change, there's a detected change section, right? So when we detect changes like this, we'll let you know, and then you can deal with them however you want. So if I click on this, you can see that there's foo.txt, and this is an add, and I can right-click, I could click promote, and that'll promote that to a real add. I could also right-click and click ignore for this. So we have a new type of file called tf-ignore that you can check into anywhere in your version control repository, and then it basically has a wildcard set of mappings. In fact, I can show you real quick. If we see, I just got a little tf-ignore file that was generated, and that'll be committed to this folder in version control. And if I open it up, it's just a text file with a set of rules that you can put in and say, hey, ignore everything in this directory. So, like, you know, the bin and the obs directories are good examples. Now, we do all that for you, but if you have your own rules, you can set them up by explicit files or wildcards or folder paths or whatever you want as part of that. But you can also see when I click promote, I promoted that one up into it. So you can do changes with whatever tool you want, although we all know that you'll only use Visual Studio. Okay, so that is local workspaces. Let's change gears one more time. And I promised you that I would talk about the MyWork page. and what's going on with that. So before I do that, let's go and talk about Agile a little bit. So I'm going to open up Web Access. And you know, we have a big new Web Access portal. There was a ton of things that we redone to this. Effectively, we are moving a lot of our non-developer experiences from Visual Studio into the web as kind of the main hub for interacting with it, right? So Visual Studio is always going to be a home for developers, but for other disciplines, you know, the web client is a pretty good one. So project management, all that stuff's there. You can even see, if we go back here, things like settings, all these things that used to be modal dialogues in Visual Studio, the admin itself is all moving over to web experiences too. Total tangent. If we go back and I drill in here, we have a bunch of Agile tools, and this talk isn't about Agile. There is a talk later I'll point you at that talks about all the new Agile experiences in TFS. But we have this new Scrum board, Agile planning, so you can do sprint planning and Scrum, and it has a Scrum board that goes along with it. But basically the idea is, you know, you've got this Scrum board that's the stuff that, you know, you're working on, you know, for this sprint in this team. And, you know, the web experience is great. You know, I can move things all around, you know, but it means I have to, you know, see, this is what happens when I go off script. There we go. Thank you. So you can go to the Agile session if you want to find out why that transition did not work. So, you know, but this is all great, but I don't do my work as a developer here. I do it in Visual Studio. So the point of the My Work page that I'm about to show you is to give you a view into this Agile board inside of Visual Studio. So if we switch back and we go to My Work, and let's just go through this section by section, collapse these down, you can see I have the section called Available Work Items. And this has given me a view of my work items. And by default, it's set up to be that same set of work that was on the task board for me. So I had, back on the task board, these five items. Now, for simplicity, these are all mine, right? So all five are mine. And here are those five items. I can change the filter to be, you know, not just for the current iteration, but all iterations. So, you know, not just the ones I'm working on this sprint, but the ones that are coming up. You know, I can do it across different sets of teams. I can plug in my own query. So if I have my own definition of what my work is, maybe I only want to see pry one bugs, right? Or whatever the criteria is that you designate as your work, you can plug in as part of it. I could plug in all work items if I'm the only guy on the team, for example, and switch over and see the full work item view if I wanted to. But, you know, we can create new work items easily. I can create a new task, you know, get some new work done, right? And plug it in there. So if we go back, this is my set of work for this sprint on my team. You also notice this one up here is bold. Anybody have any idea what that bold means? It's red on red data, right? So if I go through here, I'm just kind of viewing my work items and going through there. But if I read this one, it'll now go from bold to unbold, right? Because I've looked at it as part of it. So it's just a way of drawing attention to the work items that are most likely to be of interest to you. So, all right, now I've looked through all of my work for the day. You know, I see I got things there about implementing search and advanced search, integrate shopping and billing. Integrating always means lots of extra work. And I got this one down here called prototype PayPal integration. Prototype is a magic word, right? So I want to do that. That sounds like the most fun. So I'm going to start working on this. So I'm just going to drag this up here, and now I'm working on this. Now, this is a different way of thinking. Usually the way that you think as a dev is you go bang out some code, and then you check it in, and if you remember, you associate a work item as part of the check-in, right? So this is a kind of a different way to think about this, right? Like, I say what I'm going to work on, then I do it, right? The advantage, there is an advantage to this for you, right? Because, you know, usually you get your boss or the project manager banging on your door telling you, update this work item, or tell me what you're doing, give me some status. Well, now if we go back here and we refresh this view, without having to think about it, people can see what I'm actually working on because that state transition happened by doing that action. So let's do prototype PayPal integration. Let's close these out and let's go write some magic code again, right? So let's say to implement this, we're going to go down here, make this pay, put in an awesome implementation that I can't even spell. Maybe we'll throw in some breakpoints just because. And save that. And maybe while I was working on this, I was also using the toolbox just because. And it's all good. I'm having fun coding away. Then my boss walks in, starts chit-chatting. How's it going, Jamie? Oh, it's going good. Having fun with this PayPal stuff. My boss blows up. What do you mean the PayPal stuff? What are you doing working on that? You got way more important stuff on your plate. You know, look here. You got something. Allow users to log in. They can't even log in. How are they going to pay, right? It's like, fine, all right, okay. Interrupted, got to change. But now I got a problem, right? I got a bunch of code changes, and I got to go work on something else. And maybe they're in different files, and I can kind of juggle it that way. But how would I handle this? Well, normally I would hand this with a shelve set and shelve it away. What we've also integrated into my work is an attempt to make shelve sets a much simpler flow. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to click suspend and shelve and get a non-modal dialog again. And I can give it whatever name I want. I'll just take the default name and call it prototype PayPal integration and click suspend. What this is going to do is it's going to take the changes that I was just working on and shelve them and set them aside down here in the suspended work section, right? So I can open this up. There's the work item I was just working on. There are the changes that go with it. I can see the shelve set. I can open up the file, you know, get rid of this. There's the actual file that I was changing with all that stuff I deleted. So my changes are still there, but now I can go back and I can work on allow users to log in and get started working on that. But at this point, I'm kind of annoyed with my boss, so I'm going to take the expedient way to solve this particular little problem. So we'll go down here to off, and we'll make this none. And I'm pretty sure we won't have any problem with users not being able to get in anymore. And we will check in. And you notice that with the check-in, that the work item is already associated it because I already said I was working on it from the My Work view. All right, so we'll check that in. And now we can go back to the My Work page, and we can click Resume. Now, Resume obviously is going to unshelve those changes and bring them back so I can work on, but it also brought all of my Visual Studio state back too. The file is what I was working on, the tool window layout, the breakpoints, it's exactly where I was before I got interrupted, right? So this is all about trying to minimize the impact of disruptions. All right, so I'm back and I get about 3 characters into this. My boss comes in and says, you know, all right, what are you working on now? I said, I'm back to PayPal. I said, no, that's still not right. Go work on the search stuff. Fine. All right. Click suspend. Shelve that stuff away. Gonna work on search. Bring that up here. Go back over, open that same file. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna need a bunch of new namespaces for this. I already got that one. Codom. Whatever. I'm coding away. Then I start to realize, you know what? I'm making a lot of changes to the same exact file that I was working on before. And this is going to just cause me a pain later on. Really, what I should do here is I should just take the changes I was working on before, bring them together with the change I started on now, and do this all as one unit. The problem is that I've got these changes down here in this other shelf set, right? And bringing them together is going to be a pain. If only we could merge shelf sets, that would be great. So let's do that. So I'll click Merge Within Progress, and that'll bring all that stuff back and merge it into this code. So you can see there's all the namespaces I was just adding, and here is that pay method that I just put in. Now, again, I auto-merged it because we do that by default. If there had been a conflict because I changed the same line, you would have gotten the merge conflict experience, but it's the same exact thing you get any other time, and the flow supports that. So that's actually, I think that's probably the most popular feature with some of our developers that use like that have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shelf sets for how they use their code, manage their code today. So Okay, great. I got merged. This is all good, and I've been coding for a while, and you know, it looks like these changes were pretty impactful. I should probably get some other eyes on this before I actually check it in. So I'm going to use another new feature in the system called code review. So if we go up here, you can see there's an option called request review. So I'll click that. And what this is going to do is it's going to take the changes. And in fact, you know what? Let me go back. And for the sake of a good demo, let's make a few more changes. We'll do our refactor trick again. And then we'll request review. So we've got our 9 edits that are about to be reviewed. I can go add reviewers, like I can add Raleigh Hokey, my alter ego. I could add someone else. How about Ewald? Autocomplete there. Here's a list of the last set of review groups that I've used that I could just pick by default. Enter a name for the review, a demo review. Check out this sweet code. And submit the request. Save the file. And again, you'll notice async progress as it goes through there. And then down here, the last section is the code review section. This section will show you all of the code reviews that you have asked other people to do or that people have asked you to do, right? Now, as we're doing this, you're also going to get email messages. Like if we were to go over to our mail client and go up here, you can see that we, in fact, get build failure emails because I'm checking in a bunch of builds that are broken. But in a second, when Hotmail catches up, it will also have the code review emails. Maybe we'll check back there in a minute. So, okay, great. I got a code review out there, but it's a code review. I need a new actor here as well. So we're going to switch over to the dark theme. And the dark theme is another copy of Visual Studio running as a different user. It's running as that Raleigh Hokey guy that we added as a reviewer. So we're on his work view. Yes, commonly asked question, I did go to Virginia Tech, if you're wondering where that goes. And yes, I do live in Raleigh, also where that comes from. So you can see down there in the code review section, here's the code review from Jamie Cool, a demo review. We can click on that, and that'll open up the code review in the tool window. And I can accept or decline if I want to let him know I'm working on it. You don't have to, though. But you can see who the reviewers were. I could add another reviewer if I want somebody else to look at it, too. Here are the work items that this code is about. And then down here are all the files that were changed. And you can click through them, and you can see the diff, and with the diff coloring that we have, what the actual changes were for this particular review. You know, you can go in here and add a particular comment. I can put a comment right here on this line and say, I don't know why you changed this. And save that. And I can check the box and just say, you know, hey, I have looked at that one. And you can notice our black checkbox on black background bug in the RC as well. But I can just go through. Should I make an excuse for this bug? Yeah, I'll go ahead and make an excuse for this bug. We have been making a lot of late reactive changes based on all of the awesome feedback we have been receiving from the community on the UX for Visual Studio. What about Magenta? I'm just going to put that one aside. So, you know, go down here, we can see the other file that we were changing. Let's go through here and put another comment in here. Are you missing the code? And sure, all this looks good. And when I'm done, you know, you could put a top-level comment. It doesn't look so sweet. And then I could send the comments back so we could go back and forth, or I could just finish it and tell them it looks good, it's got some comments, or maybe, hey, it needs some work. All right, so at this point, my code review section is empty because I just did my review. I could go to the recently finished ones, and I could go back and see that review if I wanted. But we're going to switch over to the other guy. And down here, if we go open this review, we can see that Ewald hasn't done anything. He's still slacking off. Maybe I'll just remove him as a reviewer. And I got Raleigh Hokey here that says he's finished, but needs some work. So let me just go down here and check this out. So I'll look on the comment that he gave me and click on it. Actually, go to the right one. Here we go. And you know, I can see that it's got the comment highlighted. I don't know why you changed this. That's why I'm a better dev. Check that. That's fine. You know, no, it works. You know, the other guy could actually open up the shelf set too, because what had actually happened is it created a work item with a linked shelf set, is how the code review is actually implemented. So if the other guy wanted to actually unshelve my changes and see if it does in fact work or test it out, he could do that if he wanted. So I can save that. Now, let's say I put my ego aside and realize there actually is something wrong here. I can go up here because I'm looking at the shelf set version now, right? And actually, I actually find this is one of the few times where the inline mode can be easier sometimes to look at. But let's say that I did actually want to respond to the feedback. Instead of looking at working on the shelf set version, I want to work on the actual version of my workspace, right? So I can jump to that file by just clicking Edit Local File right here. It'll take me to that same file, that same spot in my actual workspace, so I could, you know, go in and actually add an implementation. Okay. So I can save that. And now I got my review. So I'm going to go ahead and just close this review as complete. And now we'll go check this guy in. And you'll see that I've got the two work items that this check-in is going to fix, but it's also got the code review itself linked to the change set for traceability. So we can check this in. Right, and then if we go look at the history here, actually one of the other random things, just a note, we went through and redesigned a bunch of our menus for source control so that we keep the ones you actually want at the top and remove the ones you don't or put them in submenus, all basically to make the right click in Visual Studio experiences a little less overwhelming for you. I won't say they aren't still overwhelming, but they're a little less overwhelming, let's put it that way. So you know, here's what we just changed. If I open that up, actually, if we open up the change set details, you can see there are the three linked work items, and there's the code review, which I can still open from the change set, and even see the comments and the diff, you know, that those comments were based on, right? So kind of end to end for the code review. You can also do code reviews. So you can do code reviews on two things. You can do them on shelf sets, which basically before you check in. You can also do them on change sets, right? So you've already checked in, but you want somebody to go look at it after the fact. You can go find that change set and trigger a code review off of that. All right, so we are at the hour mark. I am going to pause on the demos. I'm going to fire up the PowerPoint and just show you a list of some interesting things real quick. Build. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go back. Change my mind. Let me show you one thing real quick. So you see all these builds, because this is actually the biggest new thing in build. All these builds where apparently I broke the build at some point. But you see here, one completed 31 seconds ago, 9 minutes, 10 minutes, 24, 25. You know, if we go to, let's go look. I wonder how many we did. I'm curious now. Let's go to web access. So we did in the last about 10, 12, 13 builds, something like that. It's because I have a CI build set up on the folder that we were checking into, which isn't new. What's new is where these builds happened. These builds happened in the cloud. So I'm using hosted TFS for everything. We also have a pool of build machines in the cloud that are available for anyone to go use. So essentially what we do is we have this pool. When a new build request comes in, we will go allocate a machine off of the pool, assign it to go do that build, do the build, produce the outputs, and then put the build back in the pool. So it's effectively, you know, giving you multi-tenant or shared build as part of it. And this is kind of the first step towards you know, this general cloud build feature that we want to do, which we hope is going to make build very, very cheap. Because you know, you bought a build machine, you've got it set up to do builds. odds are it's not doing builds 24/7. I mean, maybe if you've got rolling on it, it is, but you have lots of downtime for it. So if you guys all have lots of downtime on your build machines, if we put it all together, we probably need way fewer build machines, which means it costs way less money to do the total number of builds you want to do. So all the build stuff's going on in the cloud. We had to do a bunch of infrastructure changes to build to support that. So that was probably one of the biggest things. The other thing with build was platform support. So, you know, Windows 8 you can do, hosted TFS, you can do the cloud build, or you can set your own build machine up on-premise and have it build against, you know, your source in the cloud. We went through and did a bunch of UX cleanup. We reduced noise in the activity log, made all of the errors and logs easier to parse and understand, less overwhelming as part of it. Work items, we redesigned the WIT forms. If you notice, as we were going through, they were a lot cleaner, simpler. We got rid of a lot of the kind of content and noise there as part of it. We also made them async wherever we could. Again, not 100% async in all places, but the number of times work item queries or something calls Visual Studio to pause should be way down. Work item merge, so you change a field, I change an unrelated field, that should just work. Does now, those types of things. Version control, preserve server mod time. So this was a big ask from VSS. You know, on my local disk, show me the modification time as the server thinks it is, not the mod time from when we actually wrote it to disk when you did the get. So that's an option. Friendly names. Friendly names, another one. So instead of domain whack your alias everywhere in version control, you actually see first name, last name. Baseless merge, so you've got two branches. We have baseless merge and two branches that don't have a direct merge relationship. You can do a baseless merge from them in the UI, establish that merge relationship. I showed you rollback in the UI, I showed you merge on unshelve. We went through, like I mentioned, we went through all of the menus and made sure that we thought we had the right ones in the right places, including some that we were missing. And I did show you change that modality gone, but there's some more modality that I didn't show you that's actually gone from the product. So that was kind of a whirlwind tour of a bunch of new things. So now's the question. So I made that bet with you guys earlier in the talk. So how many people saw the thing they were thinking of at the start of the talk today? Put your hand up if you saw it. All right, like 50%. And I'm going to assume the other 50% just aren't putting your hands up because, you know, you're only putting your hands up, right? How many people didn't see what they wanted to see? All right, so I tell you what. Do me a favor. If you don't tell me afterwards, my alias is jamiec@microsoft.com. Send me what you wanted to see, and we'll see what we can do about that. And you're not seeing that, are you? All right. J-A-M-I-E-C. Here, I'll do it over here. All right, so there's that. I'll put it up in a second. It's kind of last note, related sessions that are interesting. So I have a talk tomorrow afternoon on continuous delivery. So if you saw in the keynote where Scott was in the Azure portal and there was the option to configure it so you could do continuous delivery from TFS, meaning, hey, I check into TFS. It does an automated build because it was triggered by a CI. It runs the unit tests. If all of those things pass, it seamlessly deploys up to Azure. So you get a world where a dev checks in and you see it running in your in an actual real environment. It doesn't have to be your production environment, but a real environment in a minute. That's what that talk's going to be about. Later today, there's going to be a talk on hosted TFS. So if you're interested in that service and more details around that, I encourage you to go to that one. We have a new product called Team Foundation Server Express, which makes it easier for small teams to get started with TFS, you know, without having to buy kind of the larger enterprise license version. There's a talk on that later. And then the Agile stuff, which we touched a little bit on, we'll also have a talk tomorrow as part of it. There's a hands-on lab if you want to play around with this, but this stuff's actually pretty easy to install now, especially with the hosted service. There's no barrier. So I would say just download Visual Studio, play around with it. Get a feel for it. And I'll be here or around the Visual Studio booth the rest of the week. And I promised you guys an email alias, so we'll put it down here in the slide notes. How about that? And with that, we have 10 minutes left to take questions. So if you got any questions, feel free to go to the mics, and I'll take questions. Thank you very much.
I got a question.
Go for it.
Is there a feature where if you change the iteration path on a work item, it will automatically change all the child work items or tasks, the iteration path on those two?
The question is, if you change the iteration path on a work item, does it automatically change all of the child path? And you know, I'm going to defer that question to someone down at the booth or the Agile guys, because what I do know is that I've heard that request many times. And the Agile guys in the last 6 months have been going down their list of those types of requests a lot, and I can't remember if they actually got to that one or not. So I can't answer that one for you, unfortunately. Yep. Go for it.
Yeah, do you have any plans to implement anything for release notes, or like generating from associated work sets and bug comments?
Yeah, so the question is a common ask that we get. Do we have anything to make the generation of release notes? Like, I did a build, and show me all of the things that have changed, make it easy to generate release notes. Also, that one is amazingly high on the build backlog in terms of feature requests that we have. So we don't have it in the product yet, and I can't promise you anything that isn't in the product yet when you're getting it, but that's a very well-known request, Yep.
What's the upgrade life, process of upgrading from something that's been around since TFS 2008, still using default collection and MSF Agile 4 upgraded to 5?
Yep.
And is the stuff that you showed now available for people still using legacy process templates?
Yes, so it's a good question. So the question is, you know, what of all the things that I showed you, what was required for what? And more or less, what I showed you requires a new version of the server. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right? Now, process templates is a different question. So things that were very version control-y, right, like local workspaces, couldn't care less about what your process template is. All that stuff just works, right? For things that are tied to the process template,
like
the examples would
like
be
the code review stuff.
The code review, my work, right, because it's tied into the Azure one, those do have requirements on the process template, right? Mm-hmm. So code review, for example, requires that there's a code review work item type as part of it. So then this gets into the question of upgrade. And while we have made very good strides to make the overall server upgrade problem better, process template upgrade is also something is a much more difficult can of worms. However, it is definitely better than it has been with this release, because with this release, there after you do the upgrade of your server, there will be an option available on each of your projects to upgrade that project to inject the work item metadata that we need to make these new features go. It's a feature we call feature enablement. So you do need to make changes to those process templates, but we make it way easier as part of the product to make those if you want to.
Has there been any progress on migration? I know that the Rangers, the ALM Rangers, had a migration, but it was very lossy. You lost a lot of test cases, and none of that stuff was transferred. Has there been any progress on that?
So the question is, I have a process template of a particular older schema, and I want to fully migrate it to the newer one.
Right.
So effectively, the new addition, this release, is upgrading and making it easier to inject into the existing one. In terms of migration, I don't think it's changed in the last release, unfortunately.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Yep, go ahead.
Is there any way to merge renamed files?
Merge what?
Renamed files.
To rename files?
No, after renaming the file, instead of adding it as a new file, can I merge it to the existing one in the server file?
So after you've got a rename and you have a merge conflict as part of it?
No, I got the file from the server.
Yes.
And then rename the file. And when I checked in it, it's going to recognize as a new file instead of just, you know, merging the content of the server to the new one.
I'm not sure. I think I may need to go a little deeper with you to digest the question and answer it well. If you hang around for a minute, I'd be happy to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little more on the baseless merge?
Yeah, so the baseless merge, baseless merge is, right now in TFS, if you have two branches that are next to each other in the merge tree, obviously you can merge between them, right? But let's say that you had like a main branch in dev 1 and dev 2, and you want to merge between dev 1 and dev 2, right? That would be baseless merge. So in 2010, you could do that. You could go to the command line and go through a command line experience and do that. And at the end of that, you'd have a merge relationship, so then you could merge between dev 1 and dev 2. Mm-hmm. So what's new in 2012 is we put that in Visual Studio, so you can do the baseless merge from the Visual Studio merge experience without having to do it from the command line.
But it's basically the same baseless
merge,
it's just in the studio itself.
That's right, that's right, that's what's new, that's right.
Here.
Sorry, what was that? How does that compare to reparenting? What do you mean by reparenting? Why don't I grab you afterwards here as well? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Whoever.
Is there a way to say to get the latest files who have passed code review? Let's say that, for example, I want to have continuous deployment every single day.
Yep.
So is there a way to say I only want to get all the files that have been changed that actually have passed code review?
Yeah. You want to basically do get to latest code reviewed. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, there's not a great way to go do that other than, you know, you could look through the history and see which ones have linked change sets, but there's nothing built into the system for that.
Is there a way, is there actually a filter or something I can run and get those files, or should I dig one by one, or?
You can view history if you want as part of it. You can actually run, all of this is stored in the work item. They're all work items, they're all represented as work items. You can run reports, because they're even in the warehouse as well, to generate that kind of view. I'd have to think for a little bit to figure out the right way to, like, the right kind of tool to build that to represent what you want as part of it. But, I mean, I think what you really want is a tool that would show you kind of the change sets that have been reviewed for the, you know, for a given period of time. And then you can just sync, you can see which one's at the top and then sync to that.
Yeah, what I want to do is that all the changes that were done on a project, if I want to promote them to the staging environment or to the bed environment or for SQA, I just want to take whatever that has been reviewed by the technical lead. So.
Makes sense. You know what? I'm going to wrap it up, guys, make sure that we get out of here on time. But I will stick around and answer anybody's questions until you're done asking questions. So thank you very much.